And let me see, Peter, do we have live meeting? Cool. All right. So brand development with entity framework. Julie and Steven are going to go over all the good, hardcore, heavy-hitting code. I'm here for the fun, fluffy code or the no code. So we'll see a little bit of drag and drop support, some data binding in WPF with EF, so if we're using anything on a Windows platform, and then also a little bit with dynamic data as well. So if we need to make some quick CRUD backends or something like that, and a little bit of when to and when not to use RAD techniques and RAD tools and all that. So we could get like the nice low coding session here while we eat, and then we can move on to the heavy hitting stuff after lunch. Hopefully you guys will get the coffee and the sugar from the cookies for that. Yeah, you might want to save your cookies for that to get the sugar. So that's what we'll take a look at. RAD development with EF. So RAD is Rapid Application Development. And for some developers, it doesn't seem to matter what kind of whiz-bang wizards you give them. It's just not fast enough. For others, we like more code. What we can do with EF is we can take that same model that you've seen in Steve's talks, in Julie's talks earlier, and that you'll see again, and we can just design a model either way that you've seen, that, you know, the code first or the database first or whatever, and then you can take that and apply that to data binding scenarios in Windows, in web, pretty much anything, and it all uses that same model. You can even go ahead and extend it as well if you need to and do some code, because generally, it's kind of hard to do 100% no code for, you know, all but the smallest of applications. So as far as RAD development with Entity Framework goes and WPF, first thing we would do is create our project, a good old file new project that we're used to. You can see the new project, Project Explorer. Then we can go ahead and create a data model. And that is just a smaller picture of basically the same model that Julie had up before. All right, so that should look familiar by now. So we create our model, and what I'm going to do is create the model from the database. So I'm going to do the database-first approach, so I can just take advantage of all the point-and-click tooling. Then we can take it and just drag and drop to DataBind if we're using WPF. If we're doing dynamic data, which I'll show in a little bit, there's a line of code you actually have to write to hook it all up. Like, you should be able to handle that, I would think, especially after you've eaten and your bellies are full. We can do that line of code. But, yeah, drag and drop. We get a great little data sources window, relationship set up, all those things that you'd normally have to do kind of manually if you were working with ADO.NET data sets. Even if you did some of the data binding stuff, you'd have to go in and fudge a lot and tweak a lot. With EF, we get the nice models, the relationship set up, all that great stuff. Makes it a lot easier to be able to do this. So we'll take a look here at creating the WPF app and data binding. And I have actually started by creating the file, new project, instead of having to take you through actually doing those steps. And I selected a WPF application. Once I select the WPF application, you can see my Solution Explorer has my solution here, has a couple of XAML windows for me to be able to design or code in, and that's all that I have. It's just a blank project from scratch. If I want to add a model, I can just right-click and do the Add New Item. We already saw this today a few times. I could grab my code node, and then I could do the ADO.NET, or not code, data, ADO.NET data model. And I'll just call it AW models, and I'll hit AdventureWorks, because we're tired of Northwind, and AdventureWorks is like the new Northwind that we're almost tired of, right? So anybody have a sample database out there, start setting it up. Or you'll keep seeing these same ones over and over again. So I click Next. We have the airplane one. Yeah. We need new stuff, fresh meat. Choose your database objects. We saw this before. So I'll just grab all tables. Because we know, like a select star, all tables, yeah, right? Always want to do that. In the demo, in the world of demo land, we just grab whatever we want. But if you were actually going to create an app, you'd pick out tables or views or procs or whatever that you want specifically. I'll just grab them all so I have them all. And do my finish. And, of course, these couple of steps that you've seen a few times today. Adds my data model in. And then I can start working with it right away. You see the relationships, all the good stuff that Julie pointed out in the first session. I have my model all ready to go in the WPF application. And what I want to do is some data binding. So for some data binding, what I'll do is open this main window.xaml, and it brings up a designer. So a lot like the Windows Forms designer, not quite as grid-like, with little dots, but we can point and click, drag and drop things, do some data binding. I can also see, a little bit like ASP.NET, the XAML at the bottom. So right now I only have a little bit of code here. You can feel free to go in and change the XAML as you want or need to, or you can use design tools, or you can even go out the blend if you're doing a lot of WPF. But as I add objects to the design canvas, you'll see it will keep manipulating the XAML and writing it for me. Because at every level with our tools, there's at least some point and click, some drag and drop things that are just nice, easy things to help you write some code. And as long as we understand the code that's behind the designers and that's behind the drag and drop stuff, we're all set. And then we're ready to progress on to some of the more advanced topics. So as we go and add these, we'll just take a look at the code as well. So what I might do is just drag and drop customers and do a good old customers. But before I do that, you could see I have the customers ready in a data grid. I can see the different types for all of the different controls. So if I pulled over salesperson or company name, it would be a text box. If I did like modified date, I could get like a little date picker. So right here in my data sources window, which is the window that automatically pops up when I go to my designer, I can see this. I can see all the different ways the controls would be data binded and used. And if I grab the whole table or whole entity, I can drag and drop it as a grid, a list, details, or something customizable. So it's a great easy way to be able to just get, you know, some visual elements out there on a design canvas. So I just need to drag and drop. Once I do, you'll see that it does generate a lot of extra XAML here. So I will see inside of my window.resources, one of my resources is a customer view source. It just named it after the customer's entity and then view source. And this view source element is a lot like any of the data binding controls you would have used in ASP.NET or in WinForms, like the SQL data source or an object data source. It's just a little connector piece between the UI and the model, right? So that's your little data binding widget or the source of the data. So here we have our customer's view source that's going to supply the grid with the data. Now, I'm not into styling it all here. Of course, you could do a lot of cool styling and things like that, but we just want to get up and see the data running. Yeah, Wayne? Oh, that's a good question. So Wayne's asking if you're about using third-party tools and if that's what I use. I'm actually using the built-in tools. If you go to the View menu or the Data menu, you can get the Data Sources window. So these are just the built-in controls. But there are some third-party controls that you might be able to use. I don't know if, like, Julie or any of them in the back. Do you guys use third-party controls a lot? She's ignoring me. Okay. Juicy? Yeah. Okay. So, but you'll find a few out there. So. That's true. There are, yeah, and, you know, we really don't want to play favorites with any of the control vendors. They're all pretty great. So. Oh, yeah? But That's a great question. And actually, I'm going to show that in a little bit. So the question was, I dragged and dropped this customers over, and you see it did not bring the customer addresses or the sales orders over. And let me move this up a little so everyone can see it. There we go. So these two pieces on the bottom here. All right, so these didn't come across. When I dragged and dropped the customers, it was just the customers. Now, if I want the related data, I can drag and drop those as well and get those on there. So it will only take what you want. If I want to add more later relationally, it'll set all that up. So we'll do that in a little bit. I can go ahead and run at this point. And I haven't actually written any code. The dragging, dropping, the system.draggy droppy, as Steve Ballin calls it, system.draggy droppy did that for me. No, it's not real, guys. That's not a real namespace. Somebody looked at me like, really? I'm looking in Reflector now for that. No, not a real namespace. So here, you know, it all works, right? We got our data binding. We have our data. It's not the prettiest thing in the world, but that's why we have designers, right, and color palettes and great things like that. So we do get data. Very, very easy to work with. I could turn around and change any of that XAML at any time that I need to, but you could see that it does have that there it is, our collection view source. Now, if I actually go into the code behind for this, you'll see there's not a whole lot of code in here. Just a little bit. We have our good old window loaded, and we have a little piece built in called Get Customers Query. When the window is loaded, you can see it goes off and makes a new context. Now, any of the stuff that's in here, you guys will eventually see in one of the demos today, in one of the presentations. But here, you can see by dragging and dropping, it kind of wrote this code. It wrote the XAML, and it wrote this code for me. So it goes through, and it just makes a new instance of that context. Move it up so we can all see it. All right, so new AdventureWorks entities. Then it goes ahead, and here's that collection view source that was declared in the XAML. And what they're doing is essentially the same thing as a find control. So they're taking the XAML, and they wrote this little one-liner to kind of connect that. A lot like you would do like the call to data bind in a code behind, that's really the same thing, just in the world of WPF and XAML. Then it goes ahead and creates a little object based off of that customer entity from me generating the model, and it calls it customers query, and then it goes ahead and calls that other method that's in here. Tells it I want to get the customers that have been asked for. Then we go ahead and set the source by calling customers query.execute. So it just does, that's the basic data binding, the same kind of stuff you might do in ASP.NET when you set up the grid and you call data bind and all that stuff, just a little bit different syntax because we're working in XAML and WPF instead. And we could go ahead and refactor this. We could change it around to use different data types that we might want to, or, you know, all kind of cool things. For now, I'll go back and I'll add in the related. We have sales orders. Squish that up a little. And under our customers, and you can see also for each one of these, like the name style is a checkbox, but you can also pick out label, radio button, et cetera, et cetera. So that's really nice instead of having to actually go and type it all in. And if I do, say, sales order headers, I can drag and drop it. And because, oh, I probably wanted a details. Delete that and put it back in. There we go. So I'll click details because I want the details for that. And then just drag and drop. And then, again, the same thing. You can see a little bit of a relationship. You can see the XAML has changed a little bit. And it's going to load up another view source as well so that we can get those related sales order headers. So if I move up here, I could see here in my XAML the customer's view source and the customer sales order headers view source. I know, the names couldn't get any longer, could they? Move that up a little bit. Oh, really? Awesome. So the same thing here. It's going out and looking for a view source so that I could do some binding. You'll also see some, what's probably kind of familiar, even if you don't use WPF, it's similar to ASP.NET and similar to the other point-and-click elements in Visual Studio. But you can see all the columns, text columns or checkbox columns or any of that represented in the XAML as well, and all of the binding pieces about it, right, all the information. You feel free to type all this in if you want. Right? That's always an option. But, you know, if it does it for you and you understand the mechanics of what's happening behind the scenes, you can use that as a help instead of just a, you know, wizard where you're just leaning to it and not knowing anything about it. So we always want to investigate the XAML and the code that's generated for us. So I'll move back into here, and then you can see the code's changed a little bit. So I still have this code here. But you'll see I also do the customers, or I do it, like I typed it in, right? The designer did that for me. Customers query.include and sales orders headers. So it goes through and actually gets me both of those now that I dragged and dropped the related data on here as well. And then I could go ahead and run and keep making adjustments as I want. I can go into the grids and, you know, take columns away or add columns or remove them. And I don't really know who has orders. It took a while last time. Eventually, someone in here has an order. Yeah, yeah. I'm not going to dig through for an order, but you guys get the point there. All right, so nice master detail grid, individual controls, whatever you need. Right. Then once we have this set up, you can go ahead and refactor the code a little, maybe break it out, make it more testable. Steve's going to talk about that later, making things very testable. Being able to split out separation of concerns and things like that, or use more of a pattern-based development. But you can certainly get far enough with the RAD development till you get to a point to where you can start breaking it out and, you know, just give you a little bit of a help rather than a crutch. All right, so you just want the little extra boost, not a crutch. Yeah.
Can you limit the extent of what is auto-generated code wise? For example, you're working in
right.
But it'd be nice to be able to get a little leg up.
Right. So the question was, like, what can we do about controlling the XAML that's generated?
Or the
C-sharp code. Not really a lot. Once it's generated, then you can go in and start splitting out your tiers and patterns and all that stuff. So it's a more of just a little boost for you than if you're going to be very heavily pattern-based. Maybe you want to do more hand-rolling than, you know, than point-and-click. Yeah. There we go. Yeah? Yeah, sure. So the question was, can I use other third-party controls? Sure. There's full big suites of them everywhere, so. That's no problem. So here's a little bit of the slide with the XAML code on it. The big deal is that it makes us a collection view source that we can get to. And a little bit on the code. Some things I might do with the code for this would be changing this maybe to an IEnumerable and returning a list. I'm more of a list person, so I might do that instead of just using the object query object. Some folks might like the object query object themselves, though. But there's a lot of different ways that you can refactor. And then, of course, the window loaded is where all the binding happens. So it's kind of like the page load event in ASP.NET. We just did that. Okay. A little bit more with ES. So I showed this. We had a question on this. So if you have something, you could pick out data grid. You could pick out details and have them bound together. So you get the relationships, all the navigation properties, everything that you pretty much need. And you could do that rapidly. So ES, oh, also updating data. So if we want to, like, update data, all we need to do is go into the code. Or I could do something like add a button, a good old command button. By going back to my toolbox, if you're working in WPF, you, of course, get all these same sort of controls that you would get if you were working in a Windows environment. So I could pop off here, grab my button, stick it on my form, and then in the code behind for the button, I can just take my context and save it. Now, the problem with that is if I wanted to update some data, my context is here and the window's loaded, and then I have a little bit of code separated out here. I don't really have a shared context. So what I would need to do is take that and change it around so that the context would actually be declared in the class, and then I can access that to call the save changes. So I could do something like, I'll cheat a little. Oh, now it's get customer query. Where is my context? There we go. And yeah, I don't want that there yet. So then once I have my context, so all I did was copy and paste, and I made a context, right, available for me, and then I take it and I don't, yeah, I can make a new instance of it there, that's good, but I do have it, and I don't want to redeclare it here either. There we go. All right, so that now I make an instance of it in my Windows Loaded, and then in the button click event, I can then go ahead and call on my context. I could tell it to save changes or discard changes or do whatever I need to do, right? So I could do, you know, like a save changes in here. And then that will save back the data to the database. So just by moving code around a little bit so that the context is out of the window loaded and just available for your whole WPF form, then you can go ahead and just control that. Now, of course, if you're using more of a pattern-based development, you probably don't even want to go this route. You want to break it off so that this would be in, you know, a controller if you're using MVC or, you know, somewhere else out there, rather than having all kind of code in here. But if you're doing a small app, a little prototype, or something rapid where you're not breaking it out and, you know, testability is not a big deal because it's a little tiny thing, or a departmental app or somebody just starting out, then it's a little bit fine to work within here. It's all about, you know, where stuff works, not an absolute. Yeah, Charles. I'm not going to say it's going to go in the background and do anything. Save it, yeah. Yep. Until later. So. Yeah. Okay, so the question was if EF works against SQL CE, and I think so. Julie, is it SQL CE, right? Yeah. Compact. So there is EF support for SQL CE then. All right, we'll move over to dynamic data apps, a little bit on the website, just so we can see a couple of the nuances with it and some good things that you can do with Entity Framework. That is very easy, and hopefully we'll save you guys some tasks and time. So first off, we have a lot of options with web development. I'm going to focus on dynamic data, because this is a really super rapid way to do some really neat things, and I think it's kind of underappreciated. And you can use EF with it, but you can also use stuff like Link to SQL and object sources and all kind of other cool things. But we'll take a look today with EF and dynamic data, and we'll see the nuance of just a little bit difference. We get to register the model rather than just dragging and dropping. Actually, we're not even going to drag and drop. This is going to be better than dragging and dropping. It's no dragging and dropping, but we're not writing code either. How's that? Right? Our options were write code, drag and drop, but now we're not going to do either. We're going to crank up a project, and we'll write, like, one line of code, and the whole thing will work. I know. That's horrible. I have to write one whole line of code. Yeah, when are we going to get that, you know, thought reading module? You know, when's research going to catch up with us? I just want to think it and have it do that for me. Maybe next year, next version. I would say version 3, but we're up to 4, so not really going to work. Okay, so for dynamic data apps, hey, this looks familiar, right? We create the project, just like before, so I get something out of Solution Explorer. We create the EF model, same model as before. I even used, well, this is a different picture, but I even stole the same picture off my slide from the WPF demo. So same model, the same, you know, add new item. I suspect by the end of today, your add new item, you guys are going to be pros at that, right? Generating an EF model through that little wizard. So we create our model, and then the third step is the different step. We would go to drag and drop with WPF, but here's our line of code. We have one line of code in the global.asax file, and that just says, hey, we have the dynamic stuff. Hey, we have the data stuff. Why don't we just, like, hook them up? So that one line of code is what does the hookup for us. And it's just basically telling us that we're going to register it, and then we give it the name of that same name of our context. So we get to do that. We also want to tell it in dynamic data. We have like a little thing called scaffolding. That means just show stuff on the web page. So scaffolding equal true. Scaffolding means automatically do it all for us. Put it all up on the web page. So really, really rapid dynamic data websites, ASP.NET websites. You can get a website up and running, and I can do this in like less than a minute, get a fully functional website. That would actually be if I would shut up long enough to click, but I don't. Maybe today. I'll have a nice quiet demo where I'll be quiet. Oh, I actually have one. I'll do another one, too. How's this? It's right from the start. So our file new project, and I want to pick out web, and I want to pick out my dynamic data. And when I go to do that, I have a couple of choices. I have dynamic data entities. That's my EF model, or right here is linked to SQL. So I'll grab my dynamic data entities, click OK. So that's that first bullet point on the slide. We did our new project. And then now I'm going to want to go to my Solution Explorer and add that data model. So the same steps as before. You can go to data, my ADO.NET entity data model. Call it the same thing even. I'll call it AW model. I have at least 3 dozen files called awmodel.edmx on my machine right now, and they're all the same. Grab all my tables, the good old select star of EF, and then click finish. So I did the dynamic part by doing the file new project. I did the data part by adding the model. Now I have to hook them together. And to hook them together, I come here into my global.asax and the code behind. And I don't even have to write a line of code, technically. I uncomment the line of code that's there and make an adjustment. So how's that for no coding? Right? I technically don't even get a line out there. It's like a quarter of a line. So here's my model, register context. And, of course, I need my data context. So that will be north wind. Oh, no, we're not doing north wind. What the heck did I call it? AW model. I'm like north wind. Wait a minute. Something's wrong with that. There we go. And I'll change the scaffold all tables to true instead of false. So that's all I need to do. And then I could run and do the whole debugging stuff and all that. And sometimes my web server gets mad at me and yells first, and I have to refresh it. We'll see if it does that today. No, it was good. Okay. So I have a fully functioning website. And no, I'm not kidding either. Like, it actually works. So if I come in here and, like, click edit, I can actually edit things and come in here and update. So I made Orlando X, and you can see here on the next page, it did the update on that. I didn't even write a line of code. I changed 2 pieces of a line of code, which is not bad. Now, the great thing about this is we have admin websites everywhere. You have the front site, the big shiny site, but then some poor soul has to go in and do all the data entry and all that kind of stuff in the back end. It's perfect for that kind of stuff. It'll actually take enough of the load to run in a public-facing site, too. But look at this. You get every, like, full CRUD. Full CRUD. Edit, delete. Everything is automatic as well for this. So this is awesome for a lot of great things. So with our model, here's all the automatic stuff we get. Automatic typing. So if your customer name is a string, it's typed as a string. Dates are typed as a date, much like in the WPF model as well. We get automatic typing. Again, automatic relationships. If I go back, I'll go back to the demo in a minute, and you can see when I go into customers, I can view the related orders. I didn't have to do anything for that. I can go in and edit those. Any constraints, like a foreign key constraint, because they're fun to deal with, right? Foreign key, that's all taken care of. Things that just drive us nuts as developers, those little things that you have to do when you build a CRUD app, that's all taken care of. Also, validation, that drives you nuts. Right. You guys have to work with those JavaScript validators, and then server-side validation, that's all automatic, so we don't have to do that. It's also customizable, because you're not going to want every column of every table out there. Right, but we might need it for some other stuff. So things like, right, validation, if you forgot the first name, it'll, you know, you can even provide your own, you know, it's customizable. You can provide your own error messages, but it'll do some automatic messages for, like, required stuff. Here we can see the products table, and at the bottom, you can see there's drop-down. Now, this would be a pain if you were editing a single product, and you would have the form view or the details view control, and then you would do the little drop-downs. So for product category and product model, right, then you'd have to make the little query to get all the categories, right, using all the big data sets, put them in the little drop-down list, and then match it up with whatever happens to match up with in this record. So in this case, it is road frames, right, so that's the category for that kind of bike. Yeah? Yeah, it does. So the question was if the full, you know, system.data, .data annotations, yeah, we get pretty much all the data annotations that are available across the board here to Silverlight. Where else do they? We use them in a lot of different technologies. Yeah. Yeah, if you pick a .NET 4, now, from the EF side, I'm not sure on the iValidatable. But if you're, like, targeting 4.0, which it's going to target 4.0 by default, if you're targeting 4.0, you should be able to take advantage of anything out of data annotations. So if that's in there, that should be fine. But I can't say I've tried iValidatable. So that was the interface. Okay, yeah, so annotating classes. So here's how we there's a bunch of different ways to customize. We can customize, you know, at the page level and field level and entity level and all kind of great stuff. Of course, you guys are going to get tons and tons of ways to customize entities as we go along. And you can see a little bit more of the, here's a customized validation error. So for first name, if I didn't like what they had to say, like first name's required, I like putting in like, hey, instead. Or some kind of like weird error message that freaks out users. It's always good. So when we annotate data, this is great that we have a partial class approach to this in dynamic data. Your EF entities, and then if you used link to SQL, that would also hold true. Your entities can be extended because they're partial classes and partial methods. So we know if we have a partial class or a partial method, we don't have to bug or break the designer. Because would anybody here, like, dare to go into the EF designer in that code behind and start, like, changing stuff? Or in any designer, do you guys, where it says, like, don't modify this code? Right, you tried it, like, once or twice and saw the wrath of the studio designer. So we don't, yeah. So we want to customize, but if you mess with that, then they'll just reset all your work, right? We don't want that. or it'll do something weird because it's, you know, a designer. It's supposed to do its things. If we want to customize, we kind of have to put those on top. So we could do that by just extending with partial classes and partial methods. The big deal is, of course, if I have a customer entity, which I do, is make a partial class out of it, then I could go ahead and start using great stuff like the built-in, say like an on-company name changing or any of those events or methods that are available when something happens that I want to hook into. So whenever the company name changes, right, if it's for us, we cause an exception. If it's something else, then we might not. Another thing we could do is go ahead and extend properties. Now, there's a little tick here, and it's with the language, like any .NET language, right, C#, VB. We have partial classes, and we have partial methods, but we don't have partial properties. So we can extend the classes, and when I say extend, I just mean like extend it out into another file. So we can take those classes and use them, and we could take the methods and just make that a partial, but we can't do this with properties. Right? You can't do partial property. So what we have to do is just a little twist on the class to be able to get that to work. So what we do is we first create a class that we would put partial properties in if they existed in the language. So I'll do that. Call it customer meta. I like to nest it inside of my class that I'm extending to begin with, just because it's physically there and easier to keep track of. And then in here, I could take any of the properties, like the title property or the, you know, last name, first name, et cetera, date, whatever, and then I could start annotating it by marking it up with different attributes that are in the system.data annotations namespace and some other namespaces as well. Now, to get dynamic data or EF or anything to be able to recognize all this, what we need to do is say, you know, we have our class from the model that we're extending ourselves, but we want to include this as a helper class or buddy class. So we do that by annotating our original class that we're working with, the customer class in this case, and we tell it that we want a metadata type, and then give it a type of, and that other class. So we're saying, hey, we have customer, but it's working with this class called customer meta. I call it whatever I want. I just call it customer meta. And then here in customer meta, I could do all of my properties that I want to. So that's like a little workaround for not having partial properties in the language. Because technically properties are just like segmented methods anyway, right? So just a workaround for that. And then I could go ahead and take any of these and tack like a required, and here's my own error message. And I could use the required attribute. I could use all kind of attributes, regular expressions, all the stuff you would expect for validation. So let's take a look at that here. I have my still running application. Close that down. And if I want to annotate the model, oh, you know what? I'll switch back here. Here we go. So this is the same exact project, just a different title. But I have a little file in here, so I don't feel like typing. So I'm all lazy, and Julie made me get up early. So I don't feel like typing. I'll include this in my project. Just checking to see if you're paying attention back there. So here's that same exact code from the slide. And you can see, you know, my metadata type and also my required. But if I pop in here and I move this up a little so we can all see it. Woo, there we go. Hello, IntelliSense. There we go. So I can see a lot of different things in here, like scaffold column. The word scaffolding, particularly in dynamic data, scaffold means like display or throw it out there. So I could say scaffold column false. That means hide it. Just hide it. Just don't want it visualized. Same thing for a table. Here I can do a range, right? So if I had a, you know, minimum or maximum amount or something, So I can do range. There's required regular expressions, a whole bunch of great stuff so that you can annotate the way you need to annotate. In this case, I did the required on the title and then just said, hey, this is required. And that'll automatically pick that up by annotating. If I go and I look in the EF model really quick, oh, this one doesn't have my EF model. Hey, we got to do new item again. You guys used to this yet? Next, next, select star, and then finish. Oh, I should have called it EF model or something, AW model. Oh, I did. Okay. So here in my AW model, if I just do a nice little search, let's see. See if I find customer in here. There we go. So here's my customer class, all my good customer stuff. Do you guys know about this cool little navigate too, by the way? So if you do a control comma, little sidetrack on Visual Studio here, control comma, and this navigate to comes up. And as I type, you see how fast that is? That is so much better than like doing a find. If I double click on one of these, it'll take me right to it. Happen to be the same one. So I can do that to find some great stuff. Also in my model, which is what I wanted to do that, and then I go back to find anyway. I could come in here and see, here's some of the attributes for this. I can also go into my entities, and I could see my navigation properties. I could see different methods, all kind of cool stuff. I'll just go into these primitive properties. Ah, there's my customer. That's the one I want. There we go. So here, customer ID in 32, I could just take that and use that, or title. I've used title that's in here. There's the name. Here's the title. All right, so I could just take that title, being that it's defined here. Now, you know, if you actually came in here and tried to modify this, what would happen? All right, it would just not like what you did to it. So that's why we have a full separate .cf file. And then here, of course, with the partial class customers, and then my little helper class, and then there's my title. All right, so I can kind of extend the properties. I can kind of make partial properties, but with just a little workaround of a little helper class for this. So that's the only real gotcha with DD. Yeah. Right, because partial properties actually don't exist. I'm just calling it partial properties because that's kind of the best way to describe them. Oh, actually, you could change this and have it do stuff. What happens is, because I've told it, I've linked it with this metadata type, if I work with any of the properties or methods in here, because I could actually put this code in here, if either way it works, it's going to actually hit this stuff first. So the framework works it up so that it goes through all of your annotations and then lets it go through the EF stuff or linked to SQL stuff or whatever stuff, as far as dynamic data goes. Now, in some of the other, you know, like WPF or something else, you might run into some issues. That one you'll have to ask Julie about, if there's any gotchas in any of the other GUI sets or any of that sort of stuff. Yes, I've gone ahead and annotated, and, oh, the other thing is don't forget the namespace. I tend to forget that. Make sure it's the namespace that your model's in. And, of course, if you were working with this outside of a demo mode, you would even consider breaking this out into a separate project, right, and having the model and all that in a different project instead of all in just one little thing. And you could still kind of keep it small and have nice productivities with that. So once I have this, I can then go ahead and let me see, did I register the model in this project? Oh, there we go. So I'll really quickly, there we go. So I just changed that context registration in this little project. And then if I go into customers and edit something, I take the title out. Might be a little hard to see, but there's a little red star right away. It picked that up. And I do the first name, another little red star. And then as I click update, you can see this is the default. But I did, hey, this is required for the title. So that was my little customization running. So that ran first and picked it up on the UI layer. And then, of course, if I let validation go past here, it'll actually run that code. So there's also the customer name changing. So first name, let me see if I can just change it to whatever and do an update. Oh, that's required. I look at it, it's required. I don't type it in anyway, and I click update. Just like an end user. Oh, that let me go. That's the one we want. Oh, I didn't actually put anything in there. Yeah. Yeah, so if I had like a get or a set, any kind of code in here, then that would have run. I'm like, why didn't code run? Oh, because I didn't put any in there. Sadly, I do stuff like that every day. I sit there and I go, why didn't this code run? Oh, I should uncomment it. That might help. Stuff like that. Okay, so really, really easy to use. Real little code, right? Not a lot of code for some of these things. And if you have some prototypes or small departmental apps, you know, some of these RAD developments are great. So that leads us in here, when to use this stuff. So my favorite, if you're making cute furry caterpillars with your kids, you might want to use RAD development techniques. If you're building dog houses with your neighbor, you might want to use RAD development techniques. So yeah, small stuff, departmental stuff, CRUD, forms over data. Dynamic data is perfect for that. You just whip out an administrative site, customize it, and send it out. And then you can focus on the other core business stuff, right, with other projects. Great integration with things like LightSwitch is one of the tools for writing WPF-type apps and all that. Also, WebMatrix as well. So those are some of the smaller tools for, you know, more smaller sites, not any kind of big fancy sites or anything like that. When not to use the RAD development techniques, a big end to your application, you're not going to be able to point and click and make a whole huge mission-critical enterprise system from a couple of clicks. Just not going to happen. There's too much business logic and things that go into it. If you need stuff that's really super scalable, really super available, right, you might even look into using Azure or some cloud services if you need that. And that's probably not going to be point and click either. So if you move from working, making little pipe cleaner caterpillars with your kids, if you need something bigger, the team project, right, like the big plastic bottle bug, that's when you wouldn't use RAD techniques. Same thing, if I'm not building a doghouse, but I'm building a skyscraper, yeah, we're not going to point and click our way through that. Right? We're going to need to separate that out and get some tiers set up and use some patterns and things like that inside of our development. So that's pretty much it. Yeah, see, we started on part three, and now it's part two. Nice. Julie didn't change the last slide. So. Okay, Peter, I guess you could cut off the live meeting unless people have some questions. I don't have fancy slides like Steve did or the funny slides. The little mouse with the helmet. Yeah, so that's a whole separate thing. So one of the questions is about WebMatrix. That's not the same WebMatrix. No.